The Gateway brings you the day's news from the St. Louis region and across Missouri. It also includes stories from the Illinois side of the river and our Metro East reporter, Will Bauer.
In Alton, in Belleville, in East St. Louis, in Edwardsville, in Cahokia Heights, at Scott Air Force Base, I'm Will Bauer, St. Louis Public Radio.
Listen to reports from Will and all of our journalists weekdays on The Gateway, on the STLPR app, and wherever you get podcasts.
From St. Louis Public Radio. This is Politically Speaking. Missouri's unclaimed property program is not usually the source of a lot of legislative fireworks, but that hasn't been the case this year, especially after a House committee led by State Representative Scott Cupps excoriated Treasurer Vivek Malik over the placement of unclaimed property decals on controversial gaming machines. The Shelnob Republican joins Politically Speaking to talk about what should be learned from the controversy. Let's hit the music.
This is the Politically Speaking podcast, the definitive show about Missouri politics.
My promise to St. Louis was that I would do the absolute most for each and every person, starting with those who have the very least.
What I wanted to do was look and see what other states are doing.
We have to be willing to change those laws, that they are balanced and they affect everybody equally.
As somebody that grew up in the St. Louis area, in North St. Louis County, I didn't know any lawyers growing up.
We got to find long-term solutions to make government better, but also to be able to provide services to people.
I don't want to leave that federal money that we've been leaving all these years on the table.
We need to be spending this money to take care of Missourians.
I thought we accomplished a lot this year, but a lot more needs to be done.
And welcome to Politically Speaking. I am your host, St. Louis Public Radio political correspondent Jason Rosenbaum. Joining me in Jefferson City, she covers all things state politics and state government for St. Louis Public Radio.
Sarah Kellogg.
And joining us for the first time, he is the...
Representative Scott Cupps.
You are raring to go, aren't you?
I've had a 3.5-hour drive this morning. I worked calves all day yesterday, so didn't come up until early this morning. So I'm awake and rip-rolling, ready to go.
Yeah, and that gets me into my first question. You came into this legislative arena directly from the agricultural world. How does that kind of change your perception of, like, the Missouri House and the Missouri legislature, especially, like, when you hear people try to talk about agriculture in generalities when you are knee-deep in it on a daily basis?
So I probably do need to spend just a second explaining part of my personal background to answer that question. I grew up in a family farming operation that I'm still part of. I do farm and ranch full-time with my twin brother, identical twin brother, and my father. And we farm in it, like, a all inclusively, we farm in 5 counties, including Carroll County, Arkansas. And so we have a fairly decent sized operation, and we're fairly spread out. Now, that doesn't mean we're huge. When you live where we live, we might farm a couple hundred acres here, a couple hundred acres there. But altogether, we do operate a decently large size farming and ranching operation. But when I graduated with my bachelor's degree, my bachelor's is actually in agricultural education. And I taught high school ag ed for a couple years and then went back on a graduate assistantship to get a master's in agricultural business. And then actually I don't know whether it was a blessing or a curse, but I learned a lot about the world outside of Missouri, because I had the privilege to kind of be involved in brokerage, particularly logistics and the brokerage that is involved in kind of like the backside hedging that most all large agricultural companies have to do, involved in the import-export space. Did a lot of work out of the Pacific Northwest because the company that I worked for was based out of there. But learned a lot about how ag works, you know, from the true raw farm side to like the actual international business side. And if I'm being completely honest, that's why some of the stuff that we talk about agriculture or that gets brought up in the name of agriculture in this town, it's laughable to me. And I don't mean that as an insult. If it's not something where they're trying to manipulate the discussion by using the term ag, but so much of what we talk about that's like, oh, well, we need to do this in the name of ag, or we need to do that in the name of ag. It's like, that's not how it actually works. And so it gets to be frustrating sometimes. It's like when people come into my office or they ask me to be part of these conversations, and after 20 minutes of just listening to them, it's, I'm not a rude guy. I'm a people person. I like to get along with people, but sometimes when I listen to this nonsense, I'm like, listen, just stop, because it's not that I don't know enough. It's that I know way, way too much. And about 85% of what you are saying is to quote myself from my hearing the other day, is bogus rhetoric. And so it gets difficult for me to not try to, every time somebody starts talking about some of that stuff, to go get the whiteboard out and be like, you want the teacher in me comes out, you know, like, you want me to actually explain how all this works, who all is involved, what all is involved. Like, I'm going to need 3 hours of your time. But if you actually want to learn something, like, sit down. And that just doesn't happen in this town. Like, anybody that's ever been involved in this process will tell you, like, that's good in theory, but that doesn't happen in this town.
You're a part of the House Budget Committee. What has been your experience serving on that committee during COVID and during several years of really, really big budgets?
I'm going to tell you, I'm going to be completely honest with you. I am friends with my predecessor, who was formerly the budget chairman, now state auditor, Scott Fitzpatrick. Probably, I'm not just saying this because we're friends, probably one of the most sincere gentlemen that I have ever had the pleasure to know. Like, he's a good dude, like, genuinely a good dude. Just look at his tenure in the treasurer's office. Like, things worked really well. Well, why do you think it worked really well? Because that's the type of guy that he is. Also, when he was budget chairman, he within a matter of a couple years, built a statewide name of being a no-nonsense guy. Well, that's a little bit of who he is. And also, I'm going to take credit or try to give credit where credit's due. That's a little bit of where he's from. You know, that's the kind of the Barry County coming out in him. When I talked to him, he's like, hey, if you really, truly, he said, I know you're a nuts and bolts guy. I know you're a nuts and bolts guy. And if you're a nuts and bolts guy, you want to get on the budget committee. And so I was like, okay, that sounds, I did not realize how much work it is. Like, and I tell that to other people. Now, this is my fifth year. And it's like, I am being completely honest. If I had known how much more work it is than a rank and file representative, like, I may have not advocated so hard to be on the budget committee. The catch 22 of that is, once you do get involved in that appropriation process, you learn how important it is. And then you're like, well, I can't not be here doing this work because it's so vital. We've been very, very, very we have an insanely good budget chairman. Like, Cody Smith, it's no secret that him and I are friends. But we're friends because there's no one in this building that I trust more than him. Because, and when I say trust, I mean his actual judgment, his demeanor, his logic. And so we've been very fortunate, but as a committee, it's one of those things that we have to understand that unless we make sure that we're doing the things today, right now, to keep that legacy going into the future, whether that be with the actual bills that we pass or whether it be with some of the relationships that we make, like, that's something we can't take for granted. Because for the last, since I've had any involvement in politics, we had Fitzpatrick and then Chairman Smith, and we're going to have Representative Deaton if everything shakes out how people think it's going to. And so from an appropriation standpoint within the House, like, we've gotten jaded because we've been in such good shape, but we also have been very, very aware just within the last 6 to 8 months. It's like, that's something we can't take for granted, A, from an actual money standpoint, and B, from a, management standpoint.
What do you make of the criticism from some far right of center lawmakers that the budget has become too big under the GOP legislature and Governor Mike Parson?
So one of the biggest arguments that I will say, because I've been involved in that. So I'm anyone that knows me, like, I will give me the whiteboard. Let me talk through this with you. You cannot go out and tell me, because I'm a small government guy. Like, if there is anyone that's a small government guy in this building that actually means it, it's me. There's a lot of people that claim to be small government, and they might be small government here or there, but I'm a small government guy in the fact that I think it's government's job to necessitate things that are necessary for the facilitation and structure of what government was actually established for. And outside of that, should leave their hands off of it. Now, with that said, a lot of what we concentrate on does fit that description. It really does. But you cannot come into a conversation with me with the fact that we have had inflation that has, in many instances, when I talk to good conservative people, one of the first things that gets brought up, and when I say good conservative, like, these are my friends, my family, my people. And they always tell me, they're like, yeah, the Biden administration, they're saying that inflation is up 14%. But funny story, everything costs double, you know? And I'm like, I'm not arguing with it. Like, if I go to buy stuff that I use directly for our ranch, then there is a lot of that stuff that in comparison to 2019, 2020, pre-COVID, it literally is double. Like, it, and some of it is triple. And so you cannot come to me and argue the fact that everything costs double and triple of what it did even 4 years ago, and then also be the one that is grumpy because our budget has increased by 10%. You know, if we want to start putting inflationary parameters on what the actual size of the budget is, our budget is one of the leanest that it has been in modern history. Now, there's not anybody else, like I said, I would love the opportunity to have the whiteboard, but there's not anybody else that's actually going to sit down and talk through that, because it's just real easy to come out and be like, budget's too big, all these politicians are taking our money and spending it. It's like, no, I'll tell you, I know and work on it every day, and our budget is one of the leanest that it has been. And ironically, we're having to work through trying to make it even leaner. We are. And so we're going to have some tough decisions to make, because we're trying to make it where it's sustainable. That's the word that, you know, a lot of people use that as a buzzword. We use it as a guide. Like, we have to make sure that this is sustainable going forward. But if you can't just use the ending number without adding some rubric to show that, hey, when you include inflationary dynamics in this discussion, it's probably one of the smaller budgets that we've had in a long.
We'll be right back after this quick break with State Representative Scott Cupps.
If you have a smart speaker, you have access to the entire world of NPR and St. Louis Public Radio. All the latest news and all the captivating stories. Activate our voices with yours by telling your smart speaker to play St. Louis Public Radio.
And we're back on Politically Speaking with State Representative Scott Cupps. He is a Republican from Shell Knob, which I understand is not a city. It's like an unincorporated part of Barry County. Is that correct?
That's by design.
Okay.
And I don't know. Have you ever heard this story?
Yeah, I think Scott Fitzpatrick may have told me this story, but just go ahead.
There's some family history there. Our family is slightly responsible for the loss and keeping of the incorporation papers that would have allowed it to become a city, so that it intentionally would never become a city, so that we wouldn't have any bureaucracy. So we've got like 4,000 people, but we've got no state government. We're Wild West. Like, you want to come to Shell Knob, Missouri, and start a business, then better patter get right out of there. There's not going to be any encumbrances. We have people come all the time that want to know when the next city council meeting is. is. It's like, well, come to Terry's Cafe at 8 o'clock in the morning. We'll be happy to talk to you about whatever you want to talk about.
I was not expecting that. That is incredible. I'm no snark. I love city and corporation stories or non-incorporation stories. So, but let's get into what I think a lot of people want to hear about, and that is unclaimed property and the controversy surrounding the advertisement of it. So for our listeners, Representative Cupps is the chairman of an appropriations subcommittee that has jurisdiction over the state's unclaimed property program that's managed by the state treasurer's office. And basically this program, you sign in, you see if you have any unclaimed property, you may get either anywhere from a few bucks back to, like, I don't know, baseball cards or, you know, a lost diamond or whatever. The controversy, and you'll probably explain it in a minute, is that there were basically advertisements for this program on unregulated, questionably legal gaming machines and gas stations throughout the state. Right. And if you want to take it from there, go ahead.
So I'm going to start kind of from scratch for how this went for me, because there were some people that, as I was trying to work through this and figure out exactly what was taking place, that started accusing me and my relationship, my actual friendship with Cody Smith, who is running for state treasurer and who I already mentioned, you know, previously, is just one of a salt of the earth, genuine, can't ask for a better dude. And so people started accusing me of this being political. And the crazy part is, like, absolutely none of it was political. Like, it didn't start political. When I was trying to get answers, it wasn't political. When the state treasurer, and I'll get to this in a second, when he refused to come to my committee, it was not political. So I woke up one morning, as I do Monday mornings. So it was the Monday that we had, we got a kind of a weird quasi snowstorm in Southern Berry County, and it just got dumped on. We had like 7-8 inches of snow. Well, we had ice and we had some electric fences down. I had cattle out. I had a bad morning, and I won't go into all the details, but it had been already by 6 a.m. I had had a day. And I walk into a gas station that my brother and I stop at fairly frequently when I'm in town. And I turn to the back as I'm going to get a Diet Coke. And there are these, which I've always hated them, but there are these illegal gambling machines back there. And just bigger than Dallas on the payout kiosk is the state seal. And it says $1 billion. Like, and I was like, what? You know, and I couldn't believe my eyes. And so I went back there, and it was the state seal modified to have Vivek Malik's name, and it said state treasurer's office. And so it was made to give the appearance that these machines were operated by the state of Missouri. And so I instantly was like, my first thought, and still, in a weird way, like when I think back on that morning, it's kind of hard to believe that all of it transpired the way that it did, because my first thought was, hey, these Torch, the guys that operate and run there are other operators, but Torch is the one that owns these machines. They have put this on their machines without, you know, they've just taken it upon themselves to do this so that they could give the appearance that their machines are operated by the state of Missouri. And with that, I was like, I wonder if they've done that everywhere, or if this is something they're just doing 4 hours away from Jeff City, thinking that nobody's going to notice for a while, right? Fast forward, I make some calls. I drive around like the better half of the week. And then about midweek, there starts to be stickers showing up on all the machines that have the state seal. And they're actually designed to look like what the permit stickers and that other states use. They're placed in the same spot on the machine. Like if you were to go to a state where these machines are legal and where they're regulated, they put a state permit sticker on them. And then these stickers were being placed in that same spot, and it has the state seal and says, you know, state treasurer. And then it says $1 billion. And there's some other semantics, something about it could be yours or something like that. But it just genuinely gives the impression that these machines are operated by the state. The way that I can validate that is I went to many more than 18 places, but in 18 places I made notes in my phone because I'd actually stopped and talked to people. Now that's everything from patrons to people that worked there, managers. I talked to regional managers, and in every single instance, I asked, what's that? Why is that sticker on there? You know, I was just kind of playing dumb. And they're like, oh, well, these are run by the state now. Every single 18 out of 18, not 17 out of 18, not 16 out of 18, 18 out of 18 places. I had regional managers of regional convenience store chains telling me, oh, yes, these are now operated, regulated by the state. That's why that stuff's on there now. And so with that, I was like, we got to figure out what's going on. And because it has the state treasurer stuff all over it, I post up for a hearing because I just wanted him to come, and I actually wanted to give him a chance to be like, oh my gosh, this is egregious. What do we need to do? And because that's the committee I'm chairman of. So I post up, and then things got really sideways really fast because he said, yeah, oh no, that's fine. Or his office, you know, told my office like, yeah, that's fine. And then just out of nowhere, we get an email late in the evening, after, well after hours, that says, thankfully my legislative assistant was checking the email, but it said, Treasurer Mallett can't make it. And I was like, he's got something else. And so I was like, well, shoot, I wonder what he's got going on. And then like, in a conversation later that night with one of my colleagues, they're like, yeah, Treasurer Mallett is coming to our committee tomorrow. And I was like, what? Like, yeah, he's coming to our committee tomorrow. And he's going to be there talking on Representative Seitz's bill, China, divestment in China.
Right. And I'm just for our listeners, like, I think that he is trying to get legislation to divest some pension funds from Chinese companies.
Yeah,
I think that's what you're mentioning.
Yes, exactly. And I don't disagree with that. I actually think that that's sound policy for pension funds. I do. I think there's some of the stuff that we talk about international business wise in this building that is nonsensical, but that's not, but that's beside the point. The thing was, he came to the building to testify on that bill after telling my committee that he could not come before our committee. So I went down and found him. I went down to the other, we went to our committee. I brought the committee to order, told the committee like, hey, the treasurer can't be here. They did not even send anyone from their office like that. That was where I was like, you could have at least sent someone. They didn't send anyone. So then I went into recess. Well, then the other committee starts happening. I go find the treasurer and say, hey, good news. We are in recess. We'll be in recess all day. You just tell us when you can come. We'll work around. The committee already said we'll work with your schedule. You just tell us when you can come. And to which he said he was not going to make himself available to my committee. And that's when I knew, you know, it was not until that point that I knew, like, oh man, he has some direct involvement in this. Fast forward, because of some news stories, some other stuff. There's a lot of details in the in between. You know, this is kind of the quick fast forward. But, well, he finally agreed to come on filing day, Tuesday morning, and I was concerned because a lot of my committee couldn't be there. I want to give credit to the Democrats. You know, there's a lot of partisan politics that exist, but we got together on this deal. We really did, but we got together. Representative Nuremberg, she told me, she said, if we can get answers to the questions that you talked to me about last week. Like, I will talk to my folks and we will change our schedules. We will not go down with the rest of our colleagues to file when they're going down to file. Like, we will tell our families that are in town for this that we've got work to do. But if he is going to be there, like, we're willing to come and do the work. If you will allow us to get some answers to the questions we have. And I said, please. And so we got together. He agreed to come. He came. And wow, we were not expecting. I definitely was not expect. I didn't want it to be. I didn't want it to be adversarial in any way, shape, or form. I just wanted, like, actual raw answers to the questions that we had, like, who authorized this? When was it authorized? Whose idea was it? Is this a quid pro quo?
Yeah, Malik revealed during a hearing of the House Appropriation of that committee that he had a meeting with lobbyist Steve Tilley and representative from Torch, the company that makes the machines, in an airplane hangar.
In an airplane hangar.
And he stressed that there was no political deal made in that hangar. What do you make of that explanation?
So I'm going to say the same thing that I've said in the hearing and on other occasions. You know, I was born in the dark, in the pouring rain, but it was not last night. And if you are going to authorize, so we need to be very, very clear about a couple things. It is very advantageous for Torch to be able to put the state seal and this banner that gives people the impression that they could win $1 billion, along with links to state websites, on their machines, because it gives bystanders, and I will use that, it gives bystanders the impression that these machines are operated by the state, that they are regulated, and thirdly, that you could win $1 billion. Like, it's something that's through the Missouri lottery or through the treasury where you could win $1 billion.
Yeah, and just to interrupt, I'm looking at the sticker right now, and it says $1 billion. Is any of it yours? It has the unclaimed property program and Vivek Malik's name. This is a podcast, so we can't actually show you what it looks like. So I'm just going to describe it while looking at a picture.
And the banner that was on the payout kiosks was, in my opinion, even more egregious, because it's what said 1 billion real big. It says $1 billion. And so you have people that were playing. I literally asked them. You had people that were playing these machines that were under the impression that there was $1 billion that could be paid out. This is the craziest part in the Sunshine request. And I'll have to share this with you guys. In the Sunshine request, where we were trying to get the correspondence between them and Torch, two things that really stood out. One, as far back as January, there were correspondence with prepared statements as to how they were going to try to, answer any sort of collateral damage that would come from people asking questions about this. Secondarily, a couple of the proofs that were circulated back and forth, it used the word payout. It said, you know, unclaimed property division, real small. And then it said, like, over $1 billion. And then said, $300 average payout. It even used the word payout. So that goes to show you that the people that were creating these, as they were working through the proofs, were trying to design them in a manner to make it look like you could get this state money out of these machines. That's just it. Like, there's no other way that can be taken. Well, fast forward, as he starts to reveal some of that information, it became fairly evident to us, like, it's very, very advantageous for Torch to be able to do this all over their machine. He said on numerous occasions that he is the one that authorized that himself, not his staff, not him, but he himself is the one that authorized that. And so then the question I'll let the court of public opinion be who tries this, but the question then becomes, if there's that much in it for Torch, what is in it for the treasurer to, I know that there were correspondents in that Sunshine request that said that they were going to put this on 5,000 machines. I had people tell me that that, you know, these machines generate a couple thousand dollars a week each, and that, you know, they split that. If you start looking at the money is not hundreds of thousands, it's hundreds of millions of dollars over the course of you know, a couple years. And so when you start talking about the amount of money that these things are illicitly taking from people, it was there a deal that and it may have not been a spoken deal. It sure as heck wasn't probably a written deal. I think these guys are smarter than that. But was there an inferred deal that, hey, I'm going to authorize you all to put the state seal and the state treasurer's information and this $1 billion all over your illegal gambling machines and do it in the fake name of unclaimed property, but hey, wink, wink, I'm going to need a little bit of money for my campaign to be reelected as state treasurer. That's something that I am going to let your listeners decide if they think. I don't have any proof or evidence that that ever took place, but what I do know to be fact, it is very advantageous for Torch to be able to have this all over their machines, and it's very, very foolish, in my opinion, for the treasurer to allow that, not only to allow it, but to help and to authorize it if there wasn't something in it for him.
Oh, well, I know we're running a little short on time because I think the House is actually going to go into session in 10 minutes, but I do want to actually play a clip from this hearing. It's an exchange between Treasurer Malik and Democrat Stephanie Hine of Springfield, and it gets to why, at first, Malik was not going to take the stickers off the machine.
They're already operating.
That doesn't make them right. That doesn't make them regulated, does it? Just because they're operating does not make it legal, does not make it functional, does not make it regulated.
Does it make them illegal?
So is that how we're making our decisions in the state level? Well it's not. Maybe it's not legal. Maybe it is legal.
Representative Hine, the ball is in the court of the judicial branch and the legislative branch.
But to some extent,
I'm not going to usurp anybody's position. And I'll just make it very clear to the committee and Mr. Cupps. If it is about the morality of the question, and I'll say it very clearly, sinners and saints both and all have unclaimed property. It is my job to return it to them.
So, again, that is Treasurer Malik and State Representative Stephanie Hine, a Springfield Democrat. My understanding is the next day he sent out a directive to take these decals down. What should be learned from this whole situation?
To a couple points. To one, I can't listen to that clip without giving props to Representative Hine. Like, she hit the nail on the head in her questioning. The other thing that I want to say is he trying to tell your listeners that if they use these machines, they're sinners? You know, like, that's what no one is. I asked that, like, to one of my colleagues in the hearing. Because you are the one that is authorizing your office to be put all over them to give the impression that they're legal and operated by the state. Yet you come to my hearing and say that you are trying to reach sinners by doing that. Like, that's there's so many different facets to, like.
Yeah. And again, not to interrupt, but I know you told a story of somebody who had been putting a lot of money in this machine they were going through a really bad time. And trust me, Sarah and I have talked about this a lot. I'm not a big fan of gambling, but I also understand that there are people that get very addicted to gambling, and they shouldn't necessarily be judged as harshly as you would want to, basically.
No. The gentleman that I spoke of, I even presented the other committee members with a picture of him that he told me I could get, because I had talked to him and given him the number of the problem gambling hotline, the one that our own state operates, not the national one, but the one that we help fund, the Department of Lottery, you know, helps steer people to if they understand that they may be having some issues, because it can be addicting, and those aren't bad people. And to insinuate such, or to try to trick people into that, like, he says he's not the state pastor. Well, that's pretty obvious. You know, that's pretty obvious because he's trying to deceive people, and he sure isn't trying to add any sort of equity and helping anybody that might be having a situation like that. But with that said, you asked what can we learn from this? We cannot let people like this get away with this, stuff like this. We can't. I don't know how to say it any other way. I know that this is a podcast and not, you can't see me. I'm getting kind of worked up here this morning.
I can attest. He's sitting across from me. He's
and you would feel this way. I just want to make this clear. You would feel the same way if Cody Smith was treasurer right now and you had found out he was doing this. You would have acted the same way.
If Cody Smith was treasurer right now, I would have called for his resignation. And that's the God's honest truth. That's the God's honest truth. The neat thing is I told him that. I said, Cody, if you ever do anything like this, I said, you better be ready because I will call for your resignation within the hour. I said, if Scott Fitzpatrick ever did anything like this, I would call for his resignation that hour, period. And so people can't claim that this is some sort of political theater. The only double standard that exists is I didn't call for his resignation. If this had been one of my own friends, I would have said, nope, there's corruption involved in this, and we cannot let it continue another hour, and would have called for the resignation. I just wanted to get, I do not know Treasurer Malik that well, and so I wanted to give him the benefit of the doubt, and I wanted to give him the opportunity to answer questions. But the reality is, if it had been somebody that I know on a level like those folks that you mentioned, and they did the same thing, something as egregious, and something that is literally as obviously corrupt as this, then I would have said, there's no way that you should be allowed, not even we shouldn't reelect you. You should not be allowed to maintain your post another day.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, Representative Cupps. We will, if you continue to serve in the House, we would definitely like to get you back in the future because you've been a phenomenal guest and we have really enjoyed having you here.
I'll definitely be back now that I know where this little alcove is up above the Senate. This is one place, one of the few places in the Capitol that I've never been to before. But now that I know that it is, watch out. I'll come see you guys.
Oh, my gosh, Sarah. That's great to hear. Politically Speaking is a product of St. Louis Public Radio, which is a part of the University of Missouri St. Louis. You can find all of our stories at stlpr.org. And Representative, are you on any social media where you want to be found?
If you really need to talk to me, come to my ranch and ride around with me for a day. There'll be a couple dogs in the cab of the truck with me. I promise they only nip. They don't bite. I'm not on Twitter. I'm not. So I have Facebook. I've had Facebook since Facebook was invented, and I still have it. So if there are any of your listeners, I don't have anything to hide. I'm one of those few people who's like, I got nothing to hide. So if any of your listeners do want to get on Facebook, shoot me a message, give me a friend request. You'll probably see a lot of pictures of sunsets and cows. But other than that, I kind of keep to myself, try to make government work a little bit better and get on to my ranching life. So.
Well, thank you very much. And until next time, so long. Politically Speaking is produced by Sarah Kellogg, Rachel Lipman, and me, Jason Rosenbaum. The show is edited by Fred Ehrlich. Read all of our coverage at stlpr.org. And if you haven't already, make sure to subscribe to Politically Speaking by searching the term Politically Speaking on Apple Podcasts. From St. Louis Public Radio. This is Politically Speaking.